driving. Bill Lane crosses up. Van Vliet, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get on a rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas Sykes for three. No, it's good.
They got it.
Kansas Sykes for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Happy Thursday, birds. Welcome into this edition of the Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. As always, I'm Mikey Frinelli, alongside David Moses and Dane Dreyfus. I don't have anything clever to introduce us for the show today. I've called us the Big Three before, but I have a question for you guys. We've always said the Miami Heat, that was like the Big Three, but what's your other favorite sports Big Three? I know I'm kind of putting you guys on the spot.
You're not, but I think I'm going to go with, like, I was going to go the hockey route. But
of that, course,
you got to go with the hockey route for me.
How does this affect the Toronto Maple Leafs?
How dare you? How dare you?
I use it for him.
You're lucky I don't know Tom Brady's full name that I haven't bothered to remember.
Gonna try,
but I'm going to go with the longest tenured trio in sports history. With Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, and Chris Letang.
I thought you were going to say Wainwright, Molina, and Pujols.
No.
But Pujols was obviously gone for a
while. I'm going to go Crosby, Malkin, and Letang, because that might be an unbreakable record that was just set.
That is a good one. David, what do you think?
Yeah, you kind of started us off with a tough question here.
I'll probably
go with a group that's more modern. They won a championship last year. Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green.
Mm-hmm. Pretty unbeatable.
Really good big three. I think they cemented themselves in history last year. And
take out Draymond, put in Steve Kerr. That's my opinion.
or Andre Iguodala. I want Iguodala.
Yeah. That being pointed at the earth.
That boat doesn't turn without Draymond Green.
Good point. I love all the memes about Draymond. I mean, he's a great defensive player, but I love all the memes about, like, it's a guy flexing, and it's like Draymond Green after passing it to the greatest shooter ever 100 times a game.
I'll tell you what, Draymond Green is a Hall of Famer, and on the Golden State Warriors, if he plays for any other team, he might have been out of the league in like 3 years.
Oh, for sure. He probably will be done by now.
I mean, it's easy to showcase great defense when you're winning so many games. I mean, it's obvious.
Yeah.
But speaking of great defense, we'll have to see if the Redbirds have some good defense this weekend against Southern Illinois, a team that beat Northwestern a couple weeks ago and now comes to ISU looking for a win. The Redbirds had a bye week last week. And David, I think you're going to take us through a little bit about Redbirds football with this first segment.
Yeah, you talked about it. See if they have some great defense going into this week. They had a off week, which I had no clue we even had. They had a little bit of a bye week there last week.
Yeah, it was early on, too.
Got some good rest. Got the, some injuries I thought that could have been nursed. Maybe Winker's right. I'm not sure what the update on him is, but I know he went out in the last game against EIU with a shoulder injury. You know, it's just a good time for them to get some rest and regroup before heading into this conference play against the Salukis, a very talented team. I think it's going to be a good matchup here. You got the defense. The last game probably had one of their most dominant performances all year.
Absolutely.
Offense was firing on all cylinders. Zach Enigstedt keeps getting better each game. Having really good control of the offense, being able to get it to his receivers, knowing that our running back room is depleted. It's just been a pretty good year so far for him, and I'm looking to see him continue to improve starting this weekend.
Yeah, and we're going to have to find a way to shut down Nick Baker, their starting quarterback at SIU. He is a stud. He's got 953 passing yards this year, 9 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. And a lot of Redbird's points has been scored off turnovers. So if we can get him to turn the ball over, it could spell success for us. But if we can't, we're going to have to find ways to score points on the offensive side of the ball. Who do you guys think is going to be the focal point of the offense going in against SIU?
Well, it's about health. Like David said, if Winker's right is nursed back for this game, I mean, I think he could be a essential part of that offense. I think we talked last week about how important it would be to get the Enigstedt brothers back together on that field. I mean, I know they have been together, but just establish that connection more, because I think, David, you said it last week, there really hasn't been as much of a offensive firepower together for those brothers as much as we thought we'd see so far.
Yeah, for sure. Zach Enigstedt being the quarterback, some really, look for those deeper passes. It's just something he hasn't been able to connect with his brother with. But one of the things that me and, you know, he was on the call with us, Blake, excuse me, he was on the call with us at Wisconsin. One of the things that he noted about watching Zach Ennickstead is he's a big guy, and he's able to get that ball over these linebackers and, you know, get into the seams. And that's where a lot of the Redbirds' production offensively has come from when you're passing the ball. Obviously, you know, talk about the running game, how they, you know, haven't had the most production due to injury, you know, Cole Mueller, Winker's right. But the bread and butter this year so far in the passing game has been getting up those seams. It's kind of almost like a four verticals for all my Madden players out there.
Mm-hmm.
Making those big chunk plays and getting up the field, and they've done that pretty well. You know, you just love to see the Ennickstead connection be a little bit stronger.
So you're saying Brock's back was playing some Madden 22 during the offseason? That was the key?
He might. I saw a video of him having the team over. The team might have introduced him to Madden. Who knows?
Showed him some Madden.
See, you guys were talking about how you didn't even realize there was a bye week last week. Well, I feel like we kind of had two bye weeks in a row playing Eastern Illinois the week before.
Oh, for sure.
Not trying to throw any shade, but... Like I said, with the defense being our offense, it's like if you look at SIU's past two wins, their leading rusher is only topped like 65 rushing yards. So this is going to be – we have to stop them through the air if we stop them through the air.
May I say that this week four matchup, or week five, I guess, is ISU's first opportunity to really show what a team they are, because, you know, it's a make or break game. Because the Wisconsin loss, you're not going to beat a Big Ten program as much as we thought so that week before in the show. Valpo showed more of a fight than we thought, but not a great team. And Eastern, we've had their number for a decade. Southern is I know they're 2-2, but they're a tough in-conference opponent. And this is our first technical in-conference game. So,
you know, they might be the best team in the Valley, in my opinion.
I mean, yeah, it's right. They lost to Incarnate Word like 64-26 or something like that. 64-29, but... And then SEMO, 34-31. But since then, they've had two wins in a row. You said nine touchdown passes for the quarterback, seven of which came in the last two wins.
Yeah.
You know, you're playing a more disciplined and complete football team. EIU had struggles getting snaps up. They had struggles keeping their emotions in check when it got late into the game. Penalties started to really hurt them. SIU team is probably going to come in with just a little bit more discipline and having the ability to go out there and sustain drives and play, you know, a cleaner football game than what ISU went against 2 weeks ago. So it's definitely going to be a better challenge. It's going to, like you said, be a big storyteller to how the rest of the season could be going for them. And I'm confident in them. I think the Redbirds have played pretty well so far, you know, with the opponents they have had, you know, minus the Wisconsin game. Obviously, we know the outcome of that and the reason why, but you know, so far it's been a pretty good season, I think.
And this actually tops off a streak of three straight home games, which is the only time all season ISU will play at home at all consecutively. So back-to-back-to-back, but there's no opportunities for a back-to-back. It'll be just switching off from there on out. And then in late October, they'll have two games on the road in Indiana State and North Dakota State. So to end this little home stretch undefeated would be a strong start for the Redbirds.
So what do you think they need? This is a question for both of you. Coming off of the little bye week, break week, and you had the last game you played, a dominant win, blowout, wasn't even a second thought about it. Coming into this week, what do you need to do to be able to keep that momentum and carry it over into a win tonight? This weekend, excuse me.
Well, your defense has been your strength, and you need to address your weaknesses, which has honestly been on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, Ennickstead, I think, looked great against Wisconsin. I was there in person, watched him play, and I just feel like I haven't seen that consistency and that confidence that he had against Wisconsin in the past few weeks.
It was all on that first pick. He was so confident. He had control of the game until that 100-yard, almost 100-yard pick six, and then something was missing after that.
So
it was a confidence thing, I think.
You say it there. It's kind of a tendency we're kind of, you know, tracking here, because you said in the Wisconsin game, you threw a pick. I remember the exact play. They were marching down the field about to maybe go into the end zone.
Did a little Russell Wilson up the middle. Yeah.
Threw into about a triple or double coverage. Same thing happened versus EIU. He got pressured. He tried to run out of pocket, forced a pass downfield. It was an interception.
Right.
So it could be a pressure thing, a tendency to, you know, let the ball go and just say, oh, he's down. Tyreek Hill is down there somewhere, something like that. That's definitely something you kind of want to clean up. I want to see the same aggressiveness and control in this game against the Salukis as they did against EIU. The Redbirds in all phases of the game, offense, defense, and special teams, controlled it, imposed their will on EIU. It's going to make a lot of things easier if they can, you know, keep that same level of play consistent.
That game will be broadcast on WZND Saturday night. It'll be myself and Julian Voss on that call. I'm excited for that one. And then looking over at Redbird Volleyball, which will have both games this weekend as well, Friday and Sunday, the first in-conference home opener weekend. Of both games, Tim Zalabak, our guest last week, he'll be play-by-play in both of those games. Excited to hear that. But yeah, Redbird Volleyball, I attended their open practice last night, and as always, they look promising.
Oh, yeah. And last win, it was a great win for the team to grab against Indiana State. I think they were coming off of a two-game losing streak. Yeah. You know, those type of situations are kind of tricky. You want to get back in the win column as soon as possible because you don't want to start any trends, any tendencies, big losing streaks. You don't want that. So it was great for them to get that win, get back in the win column, and have momentum on their side going into this weekend.
Yeah, and it's especially tough losing your first actual in-conference play against Evansville, losing to them 3-1. Like, if you look at the splits, it just seems that they were kind of dominated against Evansville. They only won one set, with that one being the second set, and then they lost 25-20 and 25-18 respectively. But like I said, looking at the splits, they were out-blocked, they were out-killed, and the younger aces there weren't really there. Like, your leading kills was Sarah Kushner with 11, and then blocks was Caitlin Prodzinski, and it's like we want to see the youth movement continue. But we need to see it in conference, too.
Yeah, Ada Shadowald, really strong freshman player for the Redbirds, had a good first couple weeks and has kind of stepped back in the last 2 weeks or so and the end of the out-of-conference season, as I was talking to a few people last night. But I think there's still a lot of potential for her on this team. I think maybe she's finally been figured out maybe by some defenses, but that's not to say she can't elevate her game a little bit, literally start jumping higher.
And like you said, I mean, these are the younger players on the team. That's going to happen. They're going to be divots. They're going to be declining in numbers going throughout the season. It's a long season. All that I think needs to be done is just adjustments, making sure that you're watching. You're a film junkie. You're in the film room, addressing your mistakes so that you don't make them again. You know, you're not expected. This is a D1 school. You're not really expected to, you know, make the same mistake twice. Which, you know, I think, you know, the coaching staff here is enforcing, you know, you have to come in and be ready to work and, you know, not make that many mistakes.
Well, and looking ahead into tomorrow too, family weekends this weekend, and volleyball is trying to set an attendance record as well. So the atmosphere should be fun in the arena tomorrow. So, well, getting their first Missouri Valley win should be on the docket as well.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
We'll hear a little bit more in the next segment. We'll get to that eventually with an interview David and I had earlier with Caitlin Prodzinski. But, David, I think it was interesting what she said earlier, not to throw any shade towards Leah at all, but Leah Johnson, former head coach. But she mentioned that maybe the conditioning the Redbirds are under, Allie Matters, it's better. She said that she feels like she's in better shape going into this season than either of her first 2 years.
Yeah, I think that is accurate. You know, from what we've seen, they've been a team that plays until the last whistle. Those fifth set comebacks that they've had two so far this year. It's been pretty impressive how much stamina they've had late in the games.
They finish games
in comparison to their opponents. Yeah.
And she mentioned it. She said she feels more confident for five set matches than she did at any point in her first years, which is crazy to think about. And I'm sure she's not trying to throw any shade at Leah, obviously. But it's just interesting to see it. And Sarah Kushner said something else about it, too, recently when I talked to her. There is a difference in between just having two sets of coaching staffs and how they treat players and how they help them condition.
And not to mention, you say that their conditioning is better, but a lot of Redbirds teams this weekend are going to be looking better uniform-wise. Yep. Little blackout weekend, all black uniforms in football, soccer, and volleyball.
And they're all really good.
They're dynamite. Yeah. Like, the uniforms have impressed me this year.
Is football doing black jerseys, red helmets?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, matte red, too.
Yeah.
Matte red. That
matt
makes
red.
It all the more better.
Yeah, yeah, they're breaking them in practice this week. They haven't thrown the stickers on yet, but also it should be fun, too. They got the jerseys are black with the numbers being outlined with red, and then black numbers, too. Oh, and the stitching just looks great, the cursive on it.
Yeah.
I feel like you can really, like, screw up. Like single-colored, like all black jerseys.
Especially make such a big deal out of it, because this is something they've never done before.
Like, a la the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, I mean, I talked to somebody last year when basketball had the all-black jerseys for the first time in program history, and they had said that the reason why these Redbird teams were starting to wear these different jerseys that were black-colored was because the
group before who worked in athletics. We had an athletic director change recently and all of the above. They did not recognize black as an official ISU color. They just saw red and white. So now that they have the black jerseys for every team, hopefully we'll start to see them more often.
But they're okay, that's confusing because there's black in, red, I know, in, was, the Reggie logo.
This is I don't even, I honestly I'm not trying to keep a source anonymous because it's really not that big of a deal, but this is just someone I talked to in athletics last year. I don't remember who had said the new regime of people at the athletics office recognizes black as a primary jersey color.
I'm just gonna file that in my head under things that make me go
yeah. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we will have an interview with Caitlin Pronzinski of Redbird Volleyball. You're listening to 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Hey, this is Dickie V, baby, and you're listening to the Red Zone, baby, only on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome into the Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. Mikey Fernelli, David Moses, Dane Dreyfus. We're going to have a little interview for you here, a pre-recorded thing that David and I did earlier with Caitlin Pronzinski, a junior on the Redbirds volleyball team. And she was an impressive interview, David. I think it went really well.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it was a really good interview. I think that was, you know, being a comm student, you interview a lot of people over your time here at ISU. One of the best interviews I've done. She was just a very personable person. Made it for a good, you know, conversation with her.
And not only is she a great person, she has now evolved into a better player and a leader on this team now as a junior. So we're going to let Caitlin talk you through the rest of it. But this is our interview earlier with Caitlin Pronzinski.
First and foremost, Caitlin, what is it about so far this year that you think has been different versus your first 2 years?
Mostly like the way we train is almost polar opposite. It's a lot faster. Versus being slowed down, which I found to be like difficult, but also like really rewarding. Like we also like condition more. So I feel like maybe compared to last year in my freshman year that I feel we're more conditioned for like the 5-set matches. Like we go into them, like maybe other teams might be gassed, but like we've like the way we train, like we're more prepared and like our bodies are like feeling better for it. I think the expectation is the same and like the standard is the same, but just the way we're like training to meet that expectation is different.
Is that because of Allie? Is that something that she's put together as a new coach?
Yeah, I mean, I think just like the drills we do, like it's more like 6-on-6 action and like live. So there's one, it's just like more competing and then that brings out the more chaos. But yeah, it's definitely just like the drills we do and like it's definitely like their choice, which I think is like something that we've needed to work on as a group anyway. So it's paying off, I think.
You talked about going into the 5th set, having a lot of that energy that most teams probably won't have. Has that been a point of emphasis that Coach Allie Matters has, you know, instilled in this team?
We're always preparing for 5-set matches, especially like in the Valley, because teams are super competitive. So it's relevant, but like at the same time, I think it's not like talked about.
Yeah, for sure. And you talked about the Valley. Does the preparation going into Missouri Valley Conference game, does it change? Does it intensify? Is the team just a little bit more amped up to go out there and compete?
We shouldn't be more amped up, but I think we kind of are. And like, I don't think we necessarily prepare different. Because even in preseason, like whenever we play a team, we prepare and we scout. It just feels different. It means more because it's like these games have more of an effect on like the end of the year. So I don't think like we're like necessarily like putting more emphasis on them. But at the same time, like we know that these games, like the win-loss counts do matter more, especially for just like our placing towards the end of the year.
So we'll get on to some more stuff about this year soon, but I just wanted to first ask, what was that period like in between Leah leaving and Allie being introduced to you guys? I know there was a good month or two there as a team. What was that attitude now that it's behind you?
Right away it was really hard. It was emotional. A lot of conversations as a group, just trying to like everyone like get their thoughts out. So it was definitely, it was hectic at first, but then after a while, after like emotions settled, we were excited. And we also just like, we were talking about like, hey, just because like we lost our staff, this doesn't change anything. Like we're still all together. We're still here. And like, it's still within us to keep like the tradition of like success and winning in this program. So right away it was definitely hard with like emotions, but after that settled, it was more like logistically like, all right, we still got this. Like we have trust in like our admin and like the people here at ISU, they're going to bring in a great coach and like find the right fit. So once the emotions settled and the stress wore off, like we more just were like trusting and like felt a little bit calmer, I think. And especially after she was hired, like that like finally settled because like we realized like how great of a coach and a person that she was. And we were like, all right, let's do this.
What's something about your new coach that not everyone knows that you guys know?
She really does emphasize like mental health more so than like what I'm used to, which I think is like really important, especially like with everything going on. Like it's being more brought up, like the mental health aspect and like us as people outside of athletics, like it's being brought up on social media and stuff. And like, even before like that's become more of a big thing, that's like one of the first things she like talked about was how like the first thing she wants to do is get to know us as people and not just as athletes and like how we play, like what do you like to do? Like, just like, what are you like type things. So I think that like props to her because we all like really needed that at the time, you know?
Absolutely.
So with the new kind of regime coming in this year, and you being a part of the team last year, what has been the biggest difference for you as a player? Are you a little bit more vocal leader? Are you a little bit more hands-on with your teammates, just helping them, you know, kind of get accustomed? Because there are new faces here.
Yeah.
What's the biggest difference, you know, this year for you?
I think, well, we lost some starters. Obviously, they, like, left a different school. So my role has changed. I think, like, previous years, like, I haven't been as big of a part in the offense as I am this year. So that's, like, probably the biggest change is just, like, my expectation of like how I need to perform to like ensure like the success, like that's changed. And also like as an upperclassman now, like I am more of a leader vocally and just like I'm not necessarily leading as much like with saying things. I think that's more Katie and Sarah, but just like how I'm playing and how I carry myself on the court and like just that whole thing is more of like the way I have to lead. And I'm still like working on that. Like even if I have a bad game, like I can't show that or like show my frustration because that has a bigger impact on the team this year than it has previously. So it's more just like making sure I'm doing my job, like as a player and like vocally, that's more Katie and Sarah, but just like ensuring I'm doing what I can do. Like every game is more, which is different. And I'm still like adjusting to that, but I'm like excited for that. So.
So like, for example, coming out of your first MVC loss of the year, what was your response in comparison to, like you said, the more vocal leaders?
I think during the game, I kind of struggled that game. That was probably one of my worst games of my college career. But anyways, just like during the game, I just try to stay positive. But then after the game, it's like going in there and like addressing it. Like I addressed it after the game and like apologized almost. I'm like, hey, you know, I didn't have my best game. And like, I'm like taking full responsibility for that and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it's not necessarily during the game. That was more Katie and Sarah talking about it. But I was just trying to remain positive, which like previously, when I have a bad game or like when I'm in my head, sometimes I change my demeanor. Which was one of the biggest things Allie talked to me about was like maintaining composure. And so I handled that better.
Was there any thoughts for you or for anyone on the team about not keeping this band together? And what brought you to the point where you thought, no, we need to go back there and keep representing ISU, even under a new staff?
Honestly, I think, well, one, some of the people that left were younger. So I think like, since this is like my third year playing here, like I just love wearing the jersey that I wear. And I just love this like school. Like overall, not even just like as like a volleyball program, but like I've met so many great people here, like just this school as a whole, like it feels like my home. So I think it was a lot harder for me to leave, even though like, obviously it sucked having our coaches leave. And like that thought did cross my mind of like, hey, like, you know, maybe I should go with, but like at the end of the day, I just like knew that this is where I was meant to be with the new coaching staff or not. Like, I just love wearing the jersey that I wear and I'm genuinely proud to be a Redbird. And I think that's really why I stayed.
So you talked a little bit about your experience just overall as a Redbird. What has been one of your favorite things to do here, whether it's going to your favorite restaurant, whether it's a thing for you that's just been, it feels like home when you're in Norman?
I think it just depends on the season because we do different stuff, but I have like a really good close-knit group of friends. So like, for example, like this summer with like, obviously there was like stress going into the season and like every Wednesday, me and some of my teammates, we would go on like, it's like the Hawker Walk. Have you guys ever seen that trend? We would just like walk around. And then on Wednesdays, there was live music in Uptown. Walk around, we'd grab sushi. We would listen to live music. Like it's just little things like that, like with the people that I consider my new family. I think that is why like this place feels like home. It's just like little things like that. It's not even like big things doing crazy stuff. It's like the little moments.
What's the best sushi in Bloomington Normal?
Okay. So one, Kobe has good sushi, like the Kobe Steakhouse, but also that Mexican joint.
La Bamba?
Yes, super cheap, super good. Like actually, I feel like people, it's like not as underrated as it used to be, but like that is actually like really good.
I think the combo of both burritos and sushi is so funny.
Yeah, I know. I was like scared to try it at first. I was a little sussed out, but we're like, all right, let's just do it. And then especially like with how cheap it is, like you're kind of like, but it's honestly fire. Like it's so good. I get it all the time.
Keep with just the fun stuff about Bloomington Normal. What is another place that you and the team just like to go? Maybe it doesn't even have to be a restaurant, but where's somewhere else that you guys just enjoy hanging out or anything like that, just off the court?
Movies on Wednesdays. We try to do that as much as possible because there's that like discount. So we'll go to see a new movie on Wednesdays. We do love Kobe. Where else? Ancho and Agave. And there's this place in downtown Bloomington. Anju Above? No, Anju Above. I get those confused. It's like they have like sushi there too. It's like actually a really fun little restaurant that I feel like not many people know about. We go out to eat a lot. That's like kind of what we do. So yeah, we spend a lot of money on that and movies.
What's the best movie so far of this semester?
There was that new movie that just came out with Harry Styles. I couldn't go to it the other day, but some of my teammates did and they said they loved it. So I feel like I had to check that one out.
That chemistry, does that translate to the floor?
Yeah, it's just like trust in general, like in each other. I think it does translate, especially like for like I found with like with women's sports, like not necessarily men's sports, like there has to be more of a relationship with women's sports. I'm not sure why. I don't know why. I'm a psychology major. I should maybe know more about that, but like that does make a difference. So I think like we do emphasize like team bonding and like getting to know each other off the court, which does help with the chemistry on the court. Again, I'm not sure why it matters more in women's sports, but I think it really honestly does.
So you said you're a psych major. What's the goal after you graduate? What do you want to do?
Well, grad school. And then I'm still debating, but I'm thinking about doing industrial and organizational. It's like business psychology. It's a little bit newer, pays pretty well. It's basically like I'm in HR, but again, psychology is kind of a tough gig because you can go so many different routes and you typically need to go to grad school just to have better opportunities. So I'm still figuring that out, but I don't know. Try not to stress about it.
Would you consider playing volleyball in grad school or beyond there?
Yeah, I would actually. So I actually am graduating. I could graduate this spring, so which would have been in 3 years, but I still have 2 more years of like volleyball eligibility. So I could either add on another major, so graduate and then just get another major for my remaining years, or I could play like get my grad school done while still playing. So I have options there and I'm still trying to figure that out as well. But yeah, I still have 2 more years after this year to play. So.
And is that because of the extra added COVID year, your freshman year? Or?
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
And yeah. So you see a lot of athletes doing that, not just in volleyball and using that extra year. What's, as you said, maybe just going through classes, but what's another benefit of sticking around through a program for an added year?
Honestly, I think when you're an athlete, like the thought of not having your sport is kind of scary. It's like with this COVID year, I think a lot of athletes are taking that just for another year to like one, like play their sport for one last year, but also like have another year to kind of figure it out. You know, because being a student athlete, you have so many people like that are there to support you and like that you can go to for like honestly anything. Like we have so many people, which it's honestly one of the biggest perks of being an athlete. I think that could be it. And also just like, I don't know, wearing the like being at that school for 1 more year. Like I would love to be at ISU for 2 more years. Like just the thought of having that opportunity while still playing and wearing a jersey is like amazing.
Do you want to give us like your quick elevator pitch for why students should attend tomorrow and try and break that attendance record, please?
Honestly. The free pizza. Are you kidding me? That would have me there. If I wasn't, I would be there right away. And because our team is just fun to watch, I think. We celebrate super hard, and I don't know, I wouldn't miss it.
And thank you so much to Caitlin Prodzinski for doing that interview. Hopefully we can get her live in studio some other time soon because it was a fun interview to do. But now we're going to move on to a funeral for for a baseball team that two of our members here are proud fans of.
But who gets to eulogize them? That's up to you two to decide.
Yeah. Mm. We, of course, are talking about the Chicago White Sox, and we're happy to welcome into the studio Andrew Petrushevsky. I said the name right, right?
Yeah, you did. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Andy P, as we lovingly call him, he is... It's fitting that you're here, because you are one of the biggest White Sox fans I know.
Unfortunately.
And I love following you on Twitter because you always like the funniest White Sox posts or just funniest posts in general. But I always like the Twitter algorithm. You can see what your followers or people you follow like. So you always expose me to some great tweets. But but Andy, what is it that you wanted to talk about with this team?
All right. So
we just gave him the soapbox.
How much time do we got? Oh, we're okay.
We can skip pick six. We got half an hour of White Sox funeral.
Okay. So it is September 29th, right? The White Sox were eliminated from the playoffs yesterday. So yeah, man, there's a lot to talk about it. I have a whole notes app.
Just getting sad.
It's like a YouTuber
sadder.
Apology happening here. Except that the team should be apologizing to me, quite honestly, and David, all the fans of the team. I should be hearing apology from them, but it won't ever happen. They're just gonna criticize us and. you know, just, you know, say that we should enjoy the ride, as Steve Stone lovingly likes to criticize Sox fans about not loving the ride on Twitter.
You know, you're so right. Before we get into the technicals and stuff about the team, we have some of the best fans in the world. Mm-hmm. I work with the Sox over the summer, and my goodness, like day in and day out, it was a nice crowd. Everybody was rooting on the Sox, even though they just played some nights just like complete trash. And it's just it's tough because Chicago, you know, one of the biggest sports cities in the world, and we just keep on having these some subpar results from our sports team.
Don't worry, my day is coming with the Blackhawks.
And the Packers. Let's not do that.
Yeah.
That day's not coming anytime soon.
Don't forget that.
But, you know, coming off a second straight year where expectations were just through the roof for the Chicago White Sox team, and for them to fall substantially short of that goal this year, it's just like, I mean, you would have thought that coming into the 2021 season, us dealing with all of our injuries and pitching struggles and a plethora of other things, that they would have put a better performance up this year, but it's been the same stuff. And I'll let you get to your point. And it just feels like the players are not bought in to, because they don't play with that oomph that you expect them to. At least I don't know. What do you think?
There is a certain level of scrappiness and mental fortitude and kind of attitude and energy that I expect from my Southsiders, and that was just missing all year. And there's a couple reasons for that. And I think the biggest reason, the most apparent reason why that was missing, Tony La Russa.
He's back. His reason, because of his health.
His health, yeah. And like, I don't, you know, I hope he's doing well, but I hope he stays as far away from my White Sox as possible.
In his own quote, he is a Hall of Fame baseball man. So yes. I want, and honest to God, full respect. Mm-hmm. I respect him a lot. He is a Hall of Famer. We were just during the break, we were talking about the Cardinals' most recent World Series, and he was with them for that, and he was a great manager then, and he had even some great moments with the Sox, even despite two really poor years. That's my next question for you. You said essentially the vibes were low, and you need to have high vibes to go to the World Series, I mean, to put it in weird terms, but it didn't feel like that yet last year, though. It felt like almost Anderson and others were defending La Russa. What was different?
So there was about a month stretch. I had concerns going into 2021 about Tony La Russa because he'd been gone from the game for so long. His last like time in the game, he had an issue with a bullpen phone, and there was just stuff that I was worried about him to being too old, him like being kind of not the right type temperament for the team, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it was fine for like the first month or so, and then Yermin Mercedes happened, and there is a moment you can kind of tell moment
he defended the Twins, right?
He defended the Twins throwing at Yermin Mercedes.
Thank you for giving some exposition.
Yeah, so I'll give like a little context. Yermin Mercedes had a 3-0 count late in a game that the White Sox were blowing the Twins out, and he swung at a 3-0 pitch, hit a home run, and Tony La Russa was like basically telling the Twins to throw at him, and then the Twins the next day threw at him, and Tony La Russa defended the Twins. And there is you can like go back and you can see kind of the vibes change, you can see the energy change, and there's just a difference from the White Sox from, I think that was like late May. So even just from like early June until now, like they've just been a sorry bunch of losers. Ever since then, last year they coasted. Yeah, that's putting it nicely. Last year they coasted because the division was so weak, where they basically just played 500 ball and were able to make the playoffs, but they've just been, I don't know, just a sorry team since then.
The thing is with this division, it's still weak.
Right.
That's
like,
the
there's
thing.
No outright, oh, this team's going to be the top of the division
there's
for
no
5 years.
There's like, no Astros. There's no Yankees. No.
Like in like 2 or 3 years, though, like I think Cleveland could be that team because they just are, they're the youngest team in baseball. And then I love their pitching core we talked about last week. But another thing with a guy like Tony La Russa is like you said with the Yermin Mercedes thing, and people go like, oh, it's a business. Like they always bring up like it's a business when players get traded. It's like, why can't a player go for his contract incentives and go like hit his 15th home run of the year?
Yermin had been playing in the minor leagues for, I don't know, 10 years, something like that. He was 28 years old when he was a rookie last year. And so, you know, that guy is definitely thinking about arbitration and about, you know, making the best case, because I think he'd already been kind of falling off at that point. from like that, you know, 400 batting average.
Yeah.
So you know that guy's worried about, you know, getting more money, and fairly enough, he had been playing in the minor leagues. He was going to make the best of his opportunity. And two, just it's baseball. It is professional baseball. If you were going to throw a guy a pitch down the middle, like, I don't care what the score is, expect that guy to send it out of the park.
Mm-hmm. Because when you start like taking the foot off the gas against bad teams, you get into bad habits.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with a guy like Tony La Russa too, he kind of like Phil Jackson himself, like when Phil Jackson ruined the Knicks. it's knowing when to hang him up, and he hung him up at the right time. Like, you retired with the Cardinals.
He retired with a championship.
And it's like, come on, man. Like the game will eventually pass you by. Father Time is undefeated.
But you know how much of that is – sorry to cut you off, David, but how much of that is Reinsdorf insisting on keeping La Russa? I mean, he had the perfect excuse when La Russa got – or the news came out that La Russa had gotten arrested. I won't get into too much detail, but in that statement, he says something like – I have it pulled up. We also believe people deserve the opportunity at all points in their lives to improve. Tony knows there is no safety net below him. There cannot be a third strike.
What if you're in the 90th percentile of your life?
Yeah, because we all know that, like, you know, the one thing that 78-year-olds do is change. You know? Like,
That's the quote of the episode.
The worst part of that is they knew about the DUI. Oh, I guess, I don't know. I don't know if we want to get too into it, but
no,
they
but
knew
yeah,
about
right.
his
That's
arrest.
What it was. Yeah,
that's what it was. They knew about it, and they still hired him. They still went through the whole process when they had really good. Like, I mean, there's tons of great candidates around the league. Mm-hmm. Buck Showalter was sitting at home. Bruce Bochy was sitting at home.
Carlos Beltran got fired for something that happened during his playing career.
Yeah,
that was not illegal.
Yeah. No, like just for the Astros scandal, but like he didn't. That wasn't. Outside of sports, that's not going to get you in trouble. Like, you know, that's not like a major deal outside of the game of baseball, I guess.
Right.
So just this all could have been avoided if Jerry had decided to let Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams run the team and not just hired one of his buddies.
Right.
This all could have been avoided, and I would have been a lot happier of a man today.
But, you know, the fault doesn't just lie on Tony La Russa. I know he's the head coach. He's going to get most of the heat, you know, based off of his team's performance. But the ups and downs from under Miguel Cairo proved that La Russa wasn't the blame for everything. You know, Lance Lynn was 7-7 with a 4.16 ERA this season after going 11-6 with a 2.69 last season. He's a living, breathing definition of what the Sox have been in 2022. Just totally inconsistent and underwhelming, to say the least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a lot of fault to be put on the players, for sure, because a lot of guys have not lived up to expectations this year. The only one that I would say so far has lived up, there's been two players that have lived up to expectations. It's Jose Abreu and it's Dylan Cease. Dylan Cease he's the only person that has improved on his 2021 campaign. Abreu has regressed a little bit in the power department, but he's still hitting like 311.
And he's like 36 years old.
Yeah,
like the regression's going
to
come.
He's a legend. I mean, I got to give it to him.
I think he's a Hall of Famer.
He's right there on the fence, if not. Mm-hmm. I think there's arguments either way. But
if he had come over 4 years earlier from Cuba, I think he's from Cuba, he would
be
first.
He'd been first ballot. No, first I still think he's a Hall of Famer.
I think he probably has a very good chance. I'll say that. I wouldn't be shocked if he doesn't. He has the MVP under his belt. Mm-hmm. Whether or not that was I mean, Andy, you and I have talked about that.
Yeah.
I think it's legitimate for both Freeman and Abreu.
Mm-hmm.
For Freeman, does a little bit bigger of a body of work and is like could retire today and is a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because he's a World Series champion.
I just mean in the 2020 season they only played 60 games and they gave it to Abreu and Freeman.
Oh, so you're saying like they're not like asterisks? Like
no, I'm saying I really do not put an asterisk on those MVPs. They still were the best players in their respective leagues in that sample of games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's sad, going back to just the players underperforming, I a lot of fault is put on the players, but I think there's also like the energy with La Russa was so apparent and like the vibes were so low, and just I want to talk about just the lack of hustle from the team. Hustle meaning like, I don't know, guys not running out, you know, first base, you know, running to first base, not running out ground balls, playing lackluster defense, all that kind of stuff was so apparent. And that was a direct, I don't know, rule that basically La Russa had, was, you know, don't hustle because we don't want to get hurt. We don't want you guys to get hurt. And that was a major issue this season for sure.
Didn't they have, in the last 2 years, haven't they had every single major injury to the human body
basically,
or something like that? Yeah. It was a literal graph I saw, so that worked, obviously.
There's something wrong when a team of talented players makes fundamental and on-field mistakes over and over. There's something wrong when those talented players don't have the mental makeup to pull themselves out of a rut. And, you know, maybe just maybe those players aren't as talented as, you know, they think they are.
Moncada.
Oh my goodness.
You're just gonna say it.
Yeah.
Don't get me started.
Yeah.
But that's what the White Sox are looking like right now. They've got a lot of, I guess, soul searching to do this offseason to see who are these players that are worth, you know, investing into, and who are the players that you need to cut ties, because there are gonna be some tough cuts this year, this offseason as well.
Another thing too with the players. And like who's held responsible? It all comes back to Reinsdorf, because the training staff should be sent packing. How can you have 2 years of this, like this many injuries? Like, you are not preparing your players correctly for a professional sport if they're getting hurt like that.
Are they not stretching? I don't understand like why there's so many soft tissue running to Eloy's gotten hurt running to first base. I think Anderson has gotten hurt running to first base a lot. There's been some freak stuff, but a lot of it's just like, what are you guys not taking care and putting the work in to stretch, or what is going on? And again, like, yeah, the training staff should be long gone. I don't know why they're still here.
Yeah, you said something. One of the things that I think was the most vital part to WZND's victory over TV10 in the Phil Hall World Series is that we had a little stretch.
Okay.
We had a little static stretch. We got into a circle.
Oh, sorry, Andy.
You're really like rubbing salt in the wound right now.
I had to really quick, but it could be the preparation before the game. It could be just not watching as much film. But it's the mental error.
Did you watch film on the Phil Hall?
I didn't watch
NDP. Yeah, he was the coach of, for context of TV10, he does a little bit of both, as a lot of us do, TV10 and ZND. And he was the coach for Team TV10, and that was, we've talked about it a couple episodes in a row. I think we're going to keep living all the glory days.
Yeah.
But
and the White Sox should give Andy P a call, though, because he's a 5-tool player.
Yeah.
He brought leadership to the table. He could rake. He played excellent defense, which is more than he could say for you two. But, I hate to bring that. You know what? End the segment. We're done. This is what the White Sox brings out.
I do want to talk about, because you were talking about like they're going to have to make some tough decisions this offseason. And I actually have kind of, I don't know. I'm not going to act like, you know, I'm the GM. I would love to be the GM of the White Sox. Guys, call me up. I think me and Rick could have a nice little time together running the team. But I want to just talk about the fact that most likely we are going to have to say goodbye to Abreu if we want this team to succeed next year. Yeah. And if we want to keep Andrew Vaughn and Eloy healthy and playing every day, I think Abreu, and I hate to say it, I think he just has to go, because we have – if you want to take him, take him. I mean,
he's the perfect replacement for DH.
Yeah. Does Jimenez? I will end the segment with this, because we got to have some time for pick six. But if Jimenez becomes a daily starter and he is healthy, do you see him at DH, or do they still try him in the outfield? Because I think that's his downfall, trying him in the outfield.
I think putting him in left field is like, I don't know, it's like giving a kid scissors and telling them not to cut their hair.
Literally,
I don't really like hurt themselves, because he gets hurt in the outfield constantly.
Constantly.
Just running into walls or
multiple times running into walls.
No, he got hurt in spring training last year because he decided to like run into the wall.
He thought he was
in a meaningless game. Yeah, like I just think putting him at DH, and he's been like killing it at DH too, since he's basically been playing there exclusively since the All-Star break. So I think moving, like keeping him at DH, keeping Andrew Vaughn has like a 3, and I know we're getting close to the end, but Andrew Vaughn has, I don't know, a 3 offensive WAR, wins above replacement, but I think his like overall wins above replacement is at 0.1 because his defense is terrible. So moving him to first base is a must. We just have too many DHs, and also, I gotta say this, Leary Garcia needs to go. Please get rid of him.
Yeah, let's end with that. That's okay.
That should be the
end
of the segment. And when we come back, we're gonna talk a little bit about the NFL. Andy P is gonna stay on, and we'll have pick six coming up on the Red Zone.
Hey, this is Katie Weimerskirch, and you're listening to the Red Zone.
And it's the pick six here on the Red Zone. It's David Moses, Dane Dreyfus, Mikey Frinelli, and Andrew Petrashevsky. and we are live in the WZND studio here. We have six games. Dane handpicks them every Thursday morning. We all make our picks, and we share them together. And then we share Steve Cease's picks as well. So the first game we're going to talk about, of course, is going to be, I'm going to pick Sunday Night Football, the Chiefs and the Bucks. That's a big one. And I heard that that one's going to be in Tampa, regardless of the hurricane. Ooh. They've said it might be Minnesota, but they officially announced it'll be Tampa. David, what do you think?
It's going to be a good game for sure. Bucks just aren't playing that really good on offense, though. I know why you're looking at me like that, Dane, but okay.
I mean, we're on the radio. They can't see the way I'm looking. Can they hear the way I'm looking?
Because of my pick last week. But I'm going to go with the Chiefs. I'm sorry. I think that the Bucks just aren't doing the best right now on offense. I think that the Chiefs have improved every week as they've gone into the season. So
with losing to the Colts, yeah.
I'm going with the Chiefs.
Dane?
I think the saying was don't bet against Tom Brady.
Ah. It's never bet against Brady. It's NBAB.
Oh, NBAB?
NBAB.
Well, give me BAB. I'm going with the Chiefs in prime time.
For every NBAB, there is a BAB. I understand that. Andy P?
I think I'm going to go with the Chiefs, too. I think I'm going to agree with Dane here. I don't know. I think the Chiefs are just, at this point in the season, just playing a lot better on both sides of the football. They've upped, they've upgraded their offensive line. I think the Chiefs are just better, and I think Mahomes is just on another level.
I am mad at you guys for not picking the state that needs it the most right now. Florida is experiencing a hurricane, and you guys are not even picking their football team. No, jokes aside, prayers to everyone in Florida who is experiencing that hurricane and
for real.
Never bet against Brady, Thomas Hubbard, Patrick Brady Jr., Bucks. Moving on.
Who would Steve pick?
Oh, Steve picked the Chiefs. Thank you, Dane. And
the Lonely Island.
It puts me on the Lonely Island, yes. But if I'm on the Lonely Island with Tom Brady, I'm happy. Now we have the Patriots and Packers. And I have a shocking pick for Dane, so I will go ahead and do it first.
You're not. Dude, the spread is 10. Like, are you taking him to cover?
No, I'm taking the Packers, and I'm not happy about
it. Oh, okay. I figured you weren't going to shoot yourself in the foot for this.
I'm taking the Packers because there's literally no way, and that's all I'm going to say. I really hate picking the Packers, but David?
Yeah, it's going to be a sad week. I'm sorry I have to pick the Packers once again, but it's not going to be because of Aaron Rodgers. Mac Jones has a severe high ankle sprain, and I believe he's still going to be playing, and this Packers defense is for real. I'm just going to be real. So I'm going with the Packers on this one. Yep.
I will also go with the Packers, and it's not going to be because of Aaron Rodgers, similar reason to you, but my reason is because Matt LaFleur is a really good-looking guy. That's all I can say about
that. That works for me, and I would go with the Patriots here if you guys would give me 5-1 odds on this game, where I get 5 wins if I go Pats.
And that would get you out of the bottom of the Pats.
Yeah.
Standings.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really talk because I am on the bottom right now.
Well, it's all about separated by, like, one game, though. Like, any week it can change.
Yeah.
One swing of the bat.
But I think this might be our first sweep across the board with the Packers because I think Steve's going to go Pack here.
Steve did go Packers, putting no one on the Lonely Island, and that leaves us all with the Packers, and we're going to move on because I don't want to keep talking about that. moving on to the Bills and Ravens. This one should be interesting as well. I took the Ravens because I would normally have picked the Bills, but I've had such bad luck in my full confidence pool so far that I just decided, aside from the Bears, I was going to take every home team this week just to try and be consistent with something.
That's the point of the season we're at right now.
Yeah, I cannot try to put too much strategy into these bets. I just decided to go by the book. Home team, and I'm going to go with the Ravens. And just personnel-wise, I think Lamar Jackson's having a good season, and I think it could be an interesting showdown, although I think they do come in as the underdog. David?
This is going to be a really good game. I think both of these offenses are lights out, but one of the things that I noticed last week when the Bills lost was just the emotion and anger from each and every single one of those players that was on the field and weren't able to get the snap off to potentially send it to overtime or whatever the case was. I'm going to go with the Bills. I think they got a really big chip on their shoulder this week. They're going to come out mad, and Josh Allen
he's got that dog in
him. Oh, my goodness, yeah. So, Bills.
Andy P?
I'm going to go with the Bills, too. I just think Josh Allen's the MVP, and I don't know. I don't think the Ravens have enough guys on defense to stop him right now. The Bills are really heavily injured, and that's kind of an issue, but I think Josh Allen is just a dog. I don't know.
After the talking about this, I've just officially made up my mind in my head that I'm hammering the Bills to cover the spread. Because I think people are overreacting to a loss to the Dolphins where it was over 90 degrees. And Miami's also
weird.
Think
that game was weird. That game was cursed. There was multiple things going on in that game that I was what is going on in Miami?
People are also overreacting to a Baltimore win over a not great Patriots squad. So
after they lost to Miami.
Yeah, I'm riding the Bills here. I'm very confident.
I normally would have rode with the Bills, but I think I just wanted to pick the Ravens with my home team strategy. There's been so many upsets, throughout the season that might as well try and pick some of them. Looking at the Bears and the Giants.
Steve's pick, please.
Steve's pick for the game before was the Bills, and for this game it'll be the Giants.
Okay, wait. If it's the Bills, we don't have the sounder, but I do look like Andy Samberg, so
the Lonely Island. That's twice now that I'm on the Lonely
Island. Steve's probably like, dude, you need to stop saying that.
That's what the music is for, before and after the show. Steve went with the Giants, and I don't know if anyone is surprised, I'm going with the Bears. David?
Okay.
Come on, Dave.
This was a tough week for me. Usually when I look at the game that the Bears have, I kind of can get a sense of what I think is going to happen. But it's just been such a ugly season for our offense. So I'm still going to go with the Bears. Don't get me wrong. I'm going with the Bears.
that was the worst Bears pick ever. There's all the reasons why I shouldn't pick the Bears. Go Bears.
That feels every week, though.
Why is it working?
I kind of team up to find a reason why we should be at least positive. But nope, not this week. Go Bears.
It's been a tough run to start the season for sure.
Yeah. But we're 2-1. That's the problem.
Yeah. That is the problem. Did Danny P make his pick?
No, you can go first, Danny P. Dane wants to be last.
Okay, cool. I'll go with the Bears. I don't know. It's you know how you shouldn't eat McDonald's? That's what watching the Bears every week. It's just empty calories.
This show is awesome.
It's awesome. It's awesome to watch the Bears at noon every week and then watch real football after.
Oh, you know?
It's going from McDonald's to a steak.
Who's your favorite team?
The Bears.
Okay.
Only a true Bears fan could be that cynical. Something that a Packers fan would say.
It is acceptable to say McDonald's is your favorite restaurant as the Bears are your favorite football team.
Same energy. Same vibes.
Yeah. And then I'm just sitting here Culver, cheese curds. and this game just actually is giving me a migraine right now because I just know the Bears are going to find a way to pull it out. And I'm still going Giants here because I think Saquon could take the game over. But I'm pretty sure I'm playing at wide receiver for the Giants this week. It's just going to be a bad football game. The under's looking very enticing. I don't know, man.
So there was two games that I didn't pick the home team for, the Bears and Monday Night Football, Rams at San Francisco. I just think there's no way the Niners could beat the Rams. And I really hope that doesn't come back to bite me and then we cut just that clip and post it when the upset happens. But I just think it's not even that the Rams are great, because they are. Oh, they won the big game and they are now moving forward and with a good lineup and they're going to have a good rest of the season. But the Niners have absolutely nothing going for them right now. Nothing, especially after that game the other night, seeing how bad Garoppolo played. There is no option for them at quarterback, and that's why I'm taking the Rams.
Well, I kind of saw it differently. I ever since Trey Lance went out, my opinion on the 49ers has changed so drastically. I think they improved. I think they got better. Watching them week one against the Bears, it was hard to watch if you were a Trey Lance fan, which I'm not, but I think that the Rams.
Fields.
He's the future. I think ultimately the Rams will win this game off defense and just the fact that they are the champions. I'm going with the Rams.
Dane,
give me the Rams. I'm going to keep it short and sweet. They won the big game for a reason. So they're still the same team. They added Bobby Wagner. Maybe they lost Von Miller, but they're going to show the 49ers what's what.
I'll go with the Rams too, but sweet. It does pain me to say that one because Jimmy G is just such a good looking man. I want him to be happy. That's all.
You have a best common theme lines. With your picks.
Yeah, I like suave Italian men. I guess.
Pause.
And this has been one of the best or worst pick six segments so far. But we're gonna go for Thursday Night Football here to round it out. Steve in the last game, by the way, said the Rams. Somebody else needs to take over Steve's picks. I always forget to say him. He said the Rams in the last one, and then in this one he says the Bengals. And I'm going to agree with him. I think this is another upset, and it's not just because Cincinnati's at home. I think Miami's luck has to run out somewhere.
It's technically not an upset. The Bengals are favored by 4.
Really? I didn't even see that. I mean, the Bengals – Miami's luck has – I don't know if I agree with that line, but the Bengals' luck has to run out somewhere – or, sorry, the Dolphins' luck. And the Bengals had a really nice win last week. I know it was against the Jets, but it finally seemed like Burrow had finally kind of figured it out. Maybe the health stuff right before the season messed him a little bit in the first 2 weeks, but if he can keep that up this week – it'd be great, and those jerseys are just too cool to pick against.
Oh, yeah, the Bengals in the all-white jerseys and all-white helmets tonight. I think they're upset with how their season's gone so far. I do think they're going to come out with the win tonight. Just, you know, with a little bit more oomph. They're at home, white end zones. They probably want to put it in there a lot, so, yeah.
Dave?
Sorry.
Oh, I was going to say Dan can go next. Keep it the order.
Fornelli, I'm going to have to run the pick six next episode if you keep this up.
So I bet on the Dolphins tonight. So with that logic, I'm taking the Bengals.
We're going to win regardless.
No, that's not what I'm doing. I did it. So I on purpose bet on the Dolphins because I'm the coldest sports bettor in the world right now. So using my superpower, I'm taking the Bengals. Mark my words. There will be problems if I don't get a win in this pick six.
Imagine if they tie.
We haven't had to face that yet. I guess would we just say everyone gets the points or no one gets the points? I'd say no one.
No one.
Andy, yeah. To round it out.
I don't know. You guys all picked the Bengals that round, right? I was listening
everyone so
correctly.
Far has said the Bengals.
I so badly want to have a Ditka moment on Monday Night Football when
this would be a
Bears.
Good one to take.
I think I'm going to go with the Dolphins tonight. Yeah. Now that just to mix it up a little bit, because I think we have had the same picks for a couple of the rounds. Just have a little fun. Let's go with the Dolphins tonight.
To save
Jalen Waddle, baby.
To save Steve from pulling his lack of hair out, I'm not going to sing the Lonely Island again. So
he might get mad at the comment though.
What?
At the pulling the lack of hair out.
I don't know what you're talking about.
That's all for this edition of The Red Zone. Thank you to Andrew Petrashevsky for joining us on the show and telling us all about how much he loves Jimmy Garoppolo. We will be back next week with some more picks and some more sports talk. Thank you for listening. This has been 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again. Download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.